The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard-issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com. Knives, machetes, saws, and shears, multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com. Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Hey everyone, Will Cooper here, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. Join us as we dive deep into the world of hunting and outdoor pursuits. We've brought together some of the most accomplished individuals in the industry to share their invaluable insights and experiences with you. But here's the kicker. It's not just about hunting tips and tactics. We're exploring how you can carve your own path, elevate your skills, and gain some wisdom from the best in the field. So whether you're a seasoned hunter looking to fine-tune your skills or a newbie eager to learn, our podcast has something for everyone. Stay tuned for more exciting guests and hotter topics. Don't miss out and subscribe to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast today and start making your mark in the great outdoors.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast brought to you by Huntworth. Huntworth gear for all kinds of weather, all kinds of terrain, all kinds of budgets. It's clothing that just works. Check them out at huntworthgear.com. And quick shout out to our latest Patreon, Harvey Adams out of Milford, Delaware. Harvey's still waiting on your shirt size so I can get your swag pack out in the mail. Get that out to you here. Shortly, just need to get that, and maybe we're gonna have to start focusing a little bit on the East Coast for some Sika deer hunting. I've had a couple of opportunities, people reach out and say, "Hey, you should come out here and hunt some Sika deer," and I think it would be a ball, but I'm gonna be maybe a couple years for that one. So this podcast with Byron Horton, the Whitetail Experience, Byron puts out some high-level content, works with a bunch of companies as a content creator and kind of do their digital marketing for them. But he's really into gear. He's really kind of budget-minded and really one of these higher-level hunters. He targets higher age class deer down there in Ohio. We talk trad, we talk gear, we talk hunter shaming. We talk about our experiences and kind of goals and how all of that played out for this year and kind of what we're looking for in the year to come. But just some good information on this one. A couple of different perspectives. So it's always fun talking with Byron. I know you guys are going to like this one. Headed to ATA next week for next week's podcast. We'll announce the winner for the quarterly giveaways from, you know, all of our sponsors. You know, everybody from 2023 was great to us. Huntworth, Latitude, you can save 15% with that code BHC. And their vapor lines are incredible. So I would definitely check them out. And their sticks, we talk a lot about their sticks here on this this podcast. Spartan Forge, you can use code Bowhunter to save 25%. And that one does help us out quite a bit. Zinger and Kanadi, can't wait to see what those guys have in store. They sent me some of their larger fletchings, and they're actually Brian's been shooting them on his trad arrow, so I'm gonna have to swap those over and see how they fly out of that bow. But they did get their patent. So really awesome things for those guys. Lucky Buck, you know, we saw more deer on our property in the UP, passed more bucks up there, and the lucky buck is really working out up there. Genesis 3D printing, you know, Austin is an amazing guy. He's actually working on some products with our Patreons right now. And we're getting to see that design process and kind of how everything comes together. Super awesome. He's got a 20% off discount code for Patreon. So if you are a Patreon and you're going to order from Austin, hit me up. I'll pass that along to you. If not, like I say, if you're going to order anything from him and it's going to be more than $5, you know, if 20% is more than $5 of your order, you can help us out by signing up for Patreon and save yourself some money. And then Big Shot Targets, really looking forward to seeing those guys, meeting Al in person there at ATA. And you can save 10% there with BCP there. That Hunter Target, that five-sided indoor target with the woodchuck on the bottom is probably like my favorite target. And Byron's actually done a really nice video on that before, you know, we even knew who Big Shot was. And he said he's got two of those. So definitely check that out. Well worth it. This is a fun podcast. I know you guys are going to love it. Got a bunch of stuff in store for 2024. Going to be a fun, busy year. Hope everybody had a great, safe new year, and here's to the 2024 season. Enjoy the episode. Hey everybody, Adam back with another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast, here with Byron Horton of the Whitetail Experience, and gonna kind of cover the whole gamut of the season. I think of Byron as like a very practical, like, you know, higher level deer hunter. But he's extremely pragmatic, and I think maybe it's because of his profession or whatever, but he tends to lean towards the cheap side about things, but he always is he's very calculated on it, and he can be somewhat opinionated when it comes to technology and kind of new things. So I always love talking with Byron, love having him on here, and looking forward to a great conversation today. How you doing today, Byron?
Man, I am good. We are getting through the holidays here. Late season is upon us. And I don't know. Let's see here. In about 10 days, we got muzzleloader kicking off. I still got a tag here. And so, yeah, I am still in pursuit. Got a little scouting in this morning, but it is good, man.
So for you in Ohio, and, you know, I know you do travel, you know, sometimes out of state, depending on, you know, what the financials and your PTO and everything looks like. How is your season shaped up this year to this point?
Yeah, I would say overall, like, this is the best season without punching a buck tag I've had in a while. And so I've shot, let's see here. I shot an out-of-state doe on a short trip in October. And that was cool. Like, you know, 3 feet off the ground at like 9 yards, and don't get any better than that. The only thing that could have been was accomplishing that with the stick. I got my brother-in-law into like hunting, and he was able to take a doe on a small piece I got access to. And so that's like cool, right? Introducing somebody who has like a sports background. He's into grilling, but he said, man, maybe I'd go deer hunting. And so I was like, all right, well, I can work that into my schedule and get you in the woods, and you can kind of see what it's about. So that's been solid. And I shot a doe, like, I don't know, 2 weeks ago or something after the gun season. I did miss a buck like November 8th. And so like that hurts. But, you know, at the end of the day, this is bow hunting, and that is part of it. So that's kind of been my season. Most Pope and young bucks I've ever seen from a tree stand. And I had a lot of good encounters, even just like hunting with deer under like 10 yards this year. It just, no stick bow kill yet, but I've been shooting the last 10 days. It might have to come back out.
So yeah, we talked about that a little bit at the Mobile Hunters Expo just briefly. And, I had asked you about if your standards would change because you're, you know, 100 plus, you know, 120 inch buck is, I would say, is like your target deer, in your area. And you're like, well, we only get one tag, so I'm not going to change my standards. And can you explain that a little bit? Because I feel like all these deer, you know, for me that I've had under, you know, in stick bow range, like I feel like if you're shooting if you're passing up deer that you haven't ever shot yet, you know, it's the same thing as, you know, if you had a compound or a rifle and you're like, well, I'm waiting for a 140, you know, and on some level, I feel like, and I'm not saying that this is you, but I feel like it kind of puts it out there from like a social media standpoint or like whatever, like you're doing it for somebody else. Like it wouldn't be cool enough to kill something that big.
So, you know, for a while I had like a hard, fast line, like, oh no, like it's gotta be 20 inches wide or 120 plus or minus in that range. But then I heard Heath Sisko, far more experienced hunter than myself, talk about he has a sliding bar where he tries to hunt, say, the biggest deer he can October and somewhere in late November to December. He says, okay, well, what buck can I kill? Like he does drop a standard. He still wants to kill a buck. There's still good things to come from killing bucks, deer in general, right? Like I don't get a lot of practice of just killing deer. So when I heard that, I kind of, I shifted what I was thinking upstairs involving as a bow hunter. But yeah, now when I talked to you at the Mobile Hunter Expo, my plan was to pick up the compound November 1. So I get like a month and a half ish of stick bow hunting experience. And then I still had a lot of season left. Right. So if I had, let's just call it like a four pointer come into 10 yards, well, I still got a lot of season left. Racked buck, that was going to be a coin flip, maybe depending how nice he was. I think at this point in the game, you're right. Like I didn't kill a buck last year, so that also adjusts the scale, right? And so I'm kind of more on
which way, up or down?
Oh, okay, yeah. The listeners can't see us. I'm shifting things left or right. I would say, like, yeah, like, okay, if I would, let's say I'm gonna go hunt Saturday. If I have a racked buck and he's 110, he's probably dying. Like, especially 10 yards with the stick. And it's funny, I was thinking about this too this week with Dave. You know, you were talking inches and goals and stuff. Like, Adam, if you killed any buck with a stick bow, there's probably less deer that get killed with a stick bow than, say, 140s that are killed with gun, compound, and crossbow. And, like, maybe that is a little bit bigger of an accomplishment.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, yeah. I'm very unapologetic in, like, what I've said. You know, the first, like, the deer that I shot at this year was a dog, man. Like, it was... And just to be able to get that shot off was that was the goal in itself. And it goes back to like what I would talk to new bow hunters when they're just, you know, out there in the woods and they're just eating shit. And they're like, I'm not seeing anything. I'm not, you know, I'm just not in the game. I don't know what I'm doing scouting. I don't know. And it for me, like for anything else, like you got to try to be positive. So it's like, okay, well, did you not get lost? Did you remember your arrows? Did you, you know, did you get up in the tree without making any noise? You know, did you see a deer? You know, like I go back to my elk hunt where it was like hear an elk, see an elk, get an opportunity, like in that order. So like I've ventured into the woods a million times with the stick bow now. You know, I've missed a turkey with a stick bow. I've had deer in range. But I've not gotten a shot off. I haven't gotten drawn. And so this time, like I got drawn and like, oh, everything went bananas. It was just the worst, the worst situation ever. But I had eight does, you know, within 30 yards and I was still able to get the shot off. And I was literally 4 feet off the ground and, yeah. You know, it was late season. There's no foliage. So yeah, that's a win. So it didn't necessarily matter that I didn't shoot that deer because I could be pissed, right? Mm-hmm. But I learned, okay, well, don't do that again. But, you know, when we went and set up the spot, I had my brother take a picture of me like once I set it up because I was going to go there in the morning and just slide up the tree. And he's like, you're not going any higher than that. And I'm like, well, because of this branch, I can't. But I'll be skylined if I go any higher. So this is like where I have to be.
Yeah.
And to have, you know, 16 eyes within 30 yards, you know, and to be able to get the shot off, which is something that I hadn't been able to do, you know, in years past. So that's a win. You know, it doesn't matter that it was, you know, I would imagine it's a button. Like, I don't know. It was not a large deer by any stretch of the imagination. But
yeah, I got cracked like third hunt of the year drawing at a deer at 12 yards. And yeah, it's different. I do regret the fact I don't take a ton of PTO in October. So it's like, I don't really sit and hunt all that much. And so, yeah, I was carrying the stick bow in the woods, but those were a little more scouting than hunting. And I look back at my November and I can remember I patterned this doe coming to this one oak tree that she favored. She came there 3 mornings in a row and I kept thinking she was going to bring me the boyfriend. And I had her at under 13 yards all 3 days. And I was low 2 of those. I was 10 foot on one. Like I do kind of regret maybe that would have been a cool moment to potentially pull it off. Cause she would come in and she'd figure out something's there. They just do. And you talk about trying to draw with 8 sets of eyes. Forget that noise, man. Like I don't love when does are sticking around. Cause dude, they get you.
Well, and that's the thing is like, with the whole traditional equipment and everything and you know, for guys that are new, even with a regular compound, right? Like having deer in that bubble. I mean, I'm 12 years old again. Like I've never done this before. I have no idea. And drawing that bow and, you know, and talking with, you know, some of the guys that have done it, like often they're like, you are going to end up taking a lot of shots at moving deer because they're not, that's when they're not paying attention. Like when they're standing there, like you don't get that opportunity like you do on a compound. And, you know, with that buck that came in.
You can't draw early either. Like when they're out there 25 coming in, you can't draw and just hold it. Okay, exactly. He takes 20 seconds and now he's 15 yards. Yeah, that doesn't happen. Adam, you talk about being 12 years old. It's to me when you can start hearing them breathe. Like that, dude, I get buck fever. The heart's elevated. I'm with you because, you know, with the stick bow, I found myself hunting low. And obviously just range. Like, when you could start hearing them breathe, I start getting a little bit of buck fever and kind of crumbling it, even if it's a doe that I'm not even going to shoot.
So do you think in doing that, like in so trying, I mean, I think again, with the compound equipment, you know, we have this much larger bubble and I've listened to a lot of things that, you know, Jason Samkowiak has said, and it always ends up being the spot within the spot or these like micro terrain features. Like, do you think that that's changed the way that you look at like all of your setups?
Yeah. And I do have a question for you regarding the stick, but, you look at shooting like one feature, one thing, there might be a plan B a lot of times, but like sometimes with a compound, you can cover 3 or 4 things. With the stick and a lot of times too, with the stick, like I can't shoot what I'll call like the backside of the tree, right? Because you got the cant of the bow, let alone the things are 60 inches or 55. There's just a lot more bow up in there. And so like, I was looking at a set today and I was looking at how to ambush these deer and I couldn't hunt this set because there's a lot of trunks and like, I'm like, well, I can't even cant my stick bow to get an arrow out of it. That's that triple trunk tree. So it definitely has like made me fine tune. I found the hardest thing was I always like to tuck into places, and with the stick, sometimes you can't really tuck in because of the cant. I wanted to ask you if you found yourself tree stand hunting more over saddle hunting with the stick bow, or maybe you favored the other way.
Well, it's funny because I have not, let's see. Yeah. So I have not hunted out of a tree stand in forever. You know, talking with Todd Freeman from the Seek Wilderness podcast, UP Bowhunter on Instagram. So Todd was telling me, and it's funny because these guys who have hunted with traditional archery equipment for a long time, they have like, you know, they've done it all before. They've made all of these mistakes. And so Todd said specifically, After I missed that deer, because the next morning was when I had the encounter with that bigger one, but he said, trying to hunt with traditional equipment out of a saddle is putting yourself at this big disadvantage, because you can't move around in front of you. You only have like one little thing, and then the same thing you were talking about with. I mean, that's what happened to me. I was tucked in behind this tree. And I leaned out and drew, but there was a limb, and my top limb hit the limb, and bow flies out of the tree, all the things. Like, it's just terrible. But then my friend Tom, who's, you know, killed tons of things with the stick bow, he says, by doing it the way that I've been doing it, like when I enter gun season, that's when I pick up the traditional bow, is, you know, there's no cover, there's no leaves, there's, you know, these deer are kind of like on edge. They're maybe not as
hunted for months.
Yeah. And so, like, I'm stacking like a difficult thing on a difficult thing on a difficult thing on a difficult thing. And so next year, I'm considering going to more of a hybrid setup. And that's what I wanted to talk to you about. Like literally today before this podcast, I was doing some stuff in the garage, and I've got a wind walker out there. And nice. So I was messing around with that and seeing like how I can make a couple little upgrades to not necessarily modernize it, but I feel like make it as safe as I'm used to being, because I feel like when we talk about side pressure and things like that on the windwalker, like that's not how it was designed at all. So, but I had noticed that you'd been hunting, and even on like your latest like Patreon podcast, you talked about like really liking the hybrid setup. And one of my good buddies, Jake, you know, just bought a 0.5, and he's been kind of doing the same thing. And that's what Todd does. And so that seems to be like more of a realistic option. And that day that I actually set up real low and I had that buck come in, I was essentially, I mean, I was still hunting off of my platform because that's what I had. But I had the tether set right at waist height, so I didn't have anything up in front of me or anything like that. Like, but I was also, you know, all my eggs were in one basket because I knew the deer were coming from this way, and that's what it was going to be. I mean, I had a very, very known setup, I feel like.
Sure. Yeah, I have been hybrid hunting here a lot since gun opener because I took the saddle for that day. And I've been compound hunting. So I can take advantage of like what we'll call shooting past the tree. And I did some practicing to kind of get comfortable with that. One thing I did notice when I lean into the saddle of in the hybrid situation, I will say my group size was just a touch bigger. Now, true, it allowed me to shoot past the tree better. But I did shoot better groups with broadheads at 20 and 30 yards with more of a stand normal, like you do all summer shooting your compound on like a tree stand. I didn't stick bow hunt hybrid style. And I might play around with that idea next year because I have really enjoyed it because I stand most of my hunts. So like, you know, all my weight's on my feet. And I noticed, you know, come the rut, man, you start standing a lot of those hunts for hours on end, stacking a few days in a row. The hybrid setup allows you to take a lot of that weight off your feet, and you're close to standing, so you can kind of get in position pretty quick. Yeah, I see myself compound hunting probably hybrid style next year. Not 100% on stick bow because like you said, you kind of dance around the platform to get your shot off. Dave actually killed a deer kneeling out of a tree stand in, I don't know, 2015, 2016. And zero chance he could do that because he ducked, pulled the thing back and smoked it at like 22 yards. Like, Dave, what?
Well, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. And I mean, that is what it sounds like. It could be like, instead of like relax, stick to your process, whatever you got on the limbs of your compound, it sounds like the stick bow should just say send it on there. Like, you know, I don't know. I feel like that's where it's at, but I just enjoy the time in the woods so much more. And I enjoy shooting that bow because I was explaining archery to some people that I work with that aren't in the outdoors and don't really, have any insight into it. And I'm like, well, with a compound, if your tape is on or your pins are on and you have like three different anchor points and you know your equipment, like the only variable for the most part is you, and you make a mistake and it's 100% your fault. And that is 100% true with a stick bow, but like the opposite way, because there are only so many things. And if you have no sights and you have no rest and you know, your release could come off different every single time. But when you make that good shot, it's 100% you. Like, so all the misses are, it's because it's a stick bow. But when you make that good shot and when you start to shoot really good, it's like there's no better feeling, where it almost goes back to like with a rifle or, you know, with a compound that's really dialed in. Like, that's what's supposed to happen. With a stick bow, you never know what's going to happen. So when you make a good shot, you know, it's that much more powerful.
Yeah. You pull back a compound, you know, that arrow is going generally where that arrow is pointed. That's not necessarily the case with the stick. Like, John Dudley can pick up somebody's bow that's 4 inches short at attack, doesn't he? And he makes like 100-yard shots with other people's bows. Like, I got $100 bill says he can't do that with your stick bow at maybe even 30 yards.
But I would say that there are some of these stick bow guys that can do that. And that's what's, you know, and that's 100% that guy, you know, like, in both instances, it's the guy behind the bow, but there's just something about, I mean, so we were at TAC, I don't know if it was last year or 2 years ago. And, there was a guy, and I think he's a pretty, prominent guy here in Michigan and in the traditional community, big guy, wears a kilt. But it was this last shot and it was 55 yards uphill. And he was shooting this monster of a recurve, like from his knees and hitting foam at 55 yards uphill, like through all this stuff. And it was amazing. I mean, it was, you know, that was a shot that everybody else was, you know, making or, you know, laying up and, you know, making just hitting foam. But to do that at 55 yards and, you know, everybody was shooting a couple arrows, it was like, it was just something to watch, you know, and it was the spectacle, you know, more so than like, you know, if a guy comes up there with a brand new Matthews and he's decked out in Sitka and Crispies and all that stuff, and he's got his Crispy hat on and all that stuff, like, you expect him to hit it. But like this very eccentric man with this giant bow and, you know, turkey feathers and stuff, you're like, let's wait around and see how this is going to go, you know?
Yeah. Straight out of the Middle Ages.
Right. Right. So from that, like, hybrid, like, standpoint, I'm going to shift gears here a little bit, just because, you know, you do work with XOP and then some of the other, you know, very knowledgeable about a lot of the gear and some of the other companies out there. You know, as we're coming up to ATA and people look for innovation and things like that in this mobile hunting community, like, how much further can we take it? I mean, what are we looking towards as far as like innovation, or I guess what holes or problems need to be solved?
Yeah. So I think this year, if I'm going to go bold predictions, I'll be interested to see if other materials get brought up. I think Latitude opened some eyes last year, right? Like, made a product out of a compound material that nobody else was even, I guess Timber Ninja also. So yeah, I think we'll see stuff in that space. I think we're also getting specialized product where if you want a climbing stick that climbs really well, okay, this one does this. If you want one that packs really well, we offer this model. And so we as consumers win, because you can like almost mix match your personal preferences. Maybe you have multiple. I think we'll see that trend continue where, okay, we've made a product X that does some things really well. Let's make something that's really, really packable. Or let's go for something stupid lightweight. So all the lightweight guys have a SKU in our lineups. I think that'll come out. I think I'm still not 100% sold on the camera arm is dialed as good as it could be. Don't get me wrong, it's way better than the third arm and the Muddies of 5-6 years ago, but I do think there's room for improvement there. Packs are starting to get catered to the mobile guy, and I think that's good because there are some different needs there. But yeah, and I think some of the, like, maybe accessory items, soft goods. We're seeing systems become more prevalent where bow holders are now in, places where the sticks permanently attach is now in, versus 3 years ago, that wasn't as common.
So
what about you? What's your bold predictions as far as, let's just say, mobile hunting gear? What would you like to see?
Well, that's why it's so hard, because I feel like the envelope, I feel like we're at a point where, like, say, tree stands were 5 years ago. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if we go back, you know, 5 years or 6 years, like before this big saddle trend and everything pushed towards like super light, packable mobile stuff, there was, you know, throw out a number of tree stand companies that were made in bulk to hit a price point or to be sold at your local, you know, family farm and home, Tractor Supply, Farm and Fleet, whatever, Menards. And that was the market. That's where everybody, I guess maybe that's where the industry saw the hunter. And then you had your niche stuff, like your lone wolf. And then, you know, it had to have been like around that time when XOP was coming out with the similar products. And so you either had like super high end stuff or you had crap. And I feel like with all of the influx of all the saddles and all of the specialized stick and platform type companies, now we've got, you know, multiple companies that either have, you know, cast or the laser cut stands. You're seeing all of that. So it's really difficult to kind of say like, what's next? I mean, people like that.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
Like aerial assault or whatever it is with the, you know, the expandable sticks, and they're really nice looking platforms, are really thin, packable, stuff like that. But that's why I was asking, like, where does the industry go now? Because yes, maybe we win as a community with more options, but at the same time, I feel like we are still like in a somewhat of an echo chamber. Like our chamber maybe has grown, but we're still just, even the mobile hunter is just a small portion of the community. And we see it with like the Hawk platform and the Hawk saddle. Like the consumer doesn't necessarily win. And if that's, you're trying to hit a price point on something that, you know, shouldn't compromise on materials or, you know, that sort of thing, even though they've done it for years, that's what's difficult. So, I mean, I guess I would, unfortunately, what I see is some of these Chinese companies, some of this lower end stuff trying to move into the mobile market, and people are going to see that as a cheaper option, but it's definitely not a buy once, cry once. I think I'll be curious to see, because what we haven't seen, and why I brought it up with the hybrid setup, is that we have not seen really any marketing towards that. Like, so like Tethered, Latitude, Trophy Line, they're kind of in their business. Like we're saddle hunters and we sell saddles and we are against the tree stand. And even so far as to say, probably the most popular hybrid stand is Lone Wolf Custom Gear. And maybe they have something, what of a saddle, but there's nobody to put their name on it. And I don't mean like necessarily the John Eberhardt signature hybrid platform, right? But there isn't a guy out there who is, everybody's saying, well, it's a tool in the toolbox, or, you know, I use everything, you know, and I feel like it's situational, or the best gear is boots or conditioning, like just lose 20 pounds. Like it's all this like really generalized stuff, but there isn't anybody saying like, this is the way that I do it and this is why. And so like I said, I think until we have some sort of crossover there, like where it's okay to use both, or it's a saddle company says like, hey, you know, you can use this too. And we make the best or another great, you know, option for that. We're still going to have these camps and we're going to not see any real innovation, because, you know, when you talk about like the accessory market and some of the specialized stuff, you know, that's going to change things, you know, somewhat dramatically for, I think, an ambidextrous type setup. Because if you have like a true mobile setup with all of these gear straps and all of this stuff that are designed for facing the tree, well, now if your bow's behind you and it's not on a little arm that comes out or something like that, I think that that's where we're going to see some, if we had more crossover like accessories and things like that, where that was the biggest thing that I found moving into saddle hunting, was it was different accessories than I was used to from just hunting from a compound.
Yeah.
Hunting from a tree stand.
Yeah. It's funny. So I don't saddle hunt a ton, but I take a whole different bag and my rhythm in the woods is thrown off, because if I take a platform, I want a frame style bag that can hold that weight a little better. As you were talking, I thought it was kind of interesting. A thought popped into my head. There's tree stand companies that make saddle platforms and sticks, but like a lot of the core saddle guys, they don't make a tree stand. They only make sticks and a platform and generally the saddle apparatus itself. So I wonder if that would be a big splash. If Tethered introduced a tree stand, if Timber Ninja, like I know they flirted with the carbon stand, but I don't think I don't know. I think they nixed that idea before bringing it. But yeah, I think that would bring some waves. I'm interested to see what Latitude does with their composite, you know, carbon guru-ness, you know, like what else could they bring out? Like if they bring a camera arm, I bet it's going to be pretty sweet.
So have you used those Latitude sticks at all? Have you hunted with anybody that has them or anything like that?
No, never had them in camp. Saw them at ATA. I think they did a cool thing.
Well, I'll tell you this. So like I saw them from the 3D printed mock-up and all of the, I guess like all their heartaches through the thing, like, oh, we got to redesign, got to do this, all these things. And then I had some that were like not the final thing. So they were like, don't put these on a tree. You can bring them around to show people and so that they can see them. Don't put them on a tree because they got them. They didn't go through testing or whatever. So, and then when I got them, I was like already, like I recorded a video and stuff and I was like, man, I just don't know. Like these things, like they just don't seem stout enough, you know, and I'd been on them, you know, a dozen times, you know, one stick at the shows and jumped up and down on them and all this stuff. And, you know, you get them and you're like, oh my gosh. And I've used them all year in like from probably like 15 degrees all the way up, you know, into the 70s. I've used them in the snow. I've used them in like an absolute freaking monsoon in a monsoon like that. That was like, I put those sticks through something that never should have, you know, I had a stick. If you ever use like AM steel, you know, how if you get it too tight and you don't set the stick, it bounces. you know? Mm-hmm. So I had a stick pop off, like my third stick of four. So I was up there like on my knees on the bottom step of this stick, like all contorted, like using my bow rope to get the other stick to figure everything out. And I mean, they've performed like flawlessly, and the way they go on the tree, like the way that I was so against the way that they packed, because they pack up instead of like out. Like I prefer like the B sticks, but they just pack up so good. And the fact that I don't, you know, they come with that little strap to go around them, but you can actually, because of the cleats, just take one of the ropes, wrap it around there all the way, and then mm-hmm. just cleat it in. And so I don't have anything that I'm going to lose in the woods or anything like that. I've just been extremely, extremely impressed with them. And it's like, yeah, they gave them to me and whatever, but like, I was just as skeptical as the next guy, you know, because I do, I mean, I have used all of the other sticks, and like the B sticks are really good. Like, I mean, they're great. So it's like, if I'm going to go from one thing to the other, like it better be.
Yeah. 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 Once you've got something that's really good and hunts well.
Yeah.
Like it's tough to change.
Yeah. And so I see no reason to change from these. And I think when I explain things to people about when they ask me a question about a stick or a platform, like the B sticks to me are the standard. And so what does it offer to me that the B stick doesn't? And the same thing with like the Predator platform. Like the Predator platform is the standard. So what does it do or offer that the Predator platform doesn't? And then we can go from there and see whether it's a benefit, if it's needed, if it's not. And with the Latitude sticks, I feel like, man, like the way that they pack, the lightness, but the attachment method, I was, again, like a little bit skeptical of that. And I'd use the one sticks. We had some one sticks that we reviewed and then gave away. And there's a ton of similarities. It's just that there are no parts to the Latitude sticks. So, you know, all of that, like issues with the pins and everything that, you know, Tethered had to deal with on that. Like this has none of that. They just stick together, and then I don't have to do anything. I just tie them together. Like, give me that all day long.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think the products have gotten so good. And yeah, I guarantee you there's going to be like, there's some stuff that's going to be good. I got to imagine, I don't know if it's going to be a stick. I don't know if it's going to be a bag, but I guarantee you the mobile hunting community, somebody will make a splash that people are just going to be like, huh, might have to add that to my kit, or that can be my kit number two or something. I bet there's going to be something come out.
So when you mentioned packs, like what packs are you running? Like what are your go-tos?
Yeah. So I have, let's see here. I ran a small backpack early season. It's the Eberle Stock Bandit. That's like a decent little scouting type bag. I don't love any of the bags I have. I see a couple holes in all of them. That bag doesn't attach external gear as good. I wish it had two really good straps around the outside, and I wish it had a couple more pockets. Because like my XOP Striker bag, which I've hunted with for years, and it's probably my favorite bow hunting bag, because on the outside it's got a spot for your rangefinder, a spot for your wind indicator bottle. The top has like a spot for your like release and a headlamp. Like it organized, like those little pockets on the outside are well thought out on that bag. It's got extra straps for like bibs and jackets and stuff, which are somewhat needed for the rut, but it is bigger, right? And it's not an internal frame bag. So once you get that thing loaded up heavy, if I wasn't strapping it to a tree stand, it wouldn't carry as good as something that, that like Badlands, Eberle Stock, Kuyu, like anything internal frame oriented carries better, right? Once you start loading it up. I have the Kuyu Icon 1850 with the better like hip belt with the pouches on the side. And that bag's pretty good, but I only use that to saddle hunt or like maybe scout with. And I have been looking at the Mystery Ranch bags, because I think that Icon 1850, like I just it's close, but I kind of think I might like some of the mystery ranch options in that same similar size a little better. I see a lot of guys raving about those. So those are on the to look at list.
Like the pop-ups or?
Yeah, I think it's the pop-ups, the 28.
28, or, yeah. I had a 28, yeah, I hated yeah. it.
Okay, and then is there another one that...
There's a 38, but they just came out okay. with a pop-up 40, I think.
Okay, is that the one that you can, like, the frame stays on there and you could actually remove the bag out a
yep,
bit?
Yeah, it folds out like that, yeah.
Okay, and do you know if they're, because they have some true whitetail-oriented bags, do those have internal frames in them? I know they're like a quiet material, but I didn't know if they had...
I don't know, I think that... I think they make like that pop-up 40 it's either the 30 or the 40. It was one of the new ones like last year. I think it has a combination of both. It has that quiet material and it pulls off. Like I had the 28, which a lot of people like, but it didn't have the straps on the outside that I was looking for. And it didn't have the pouches. My dad has the 38. And like, if you were saddle hunting, that would be perfect. I mean, the 38's probably, I mean, if I was going to buy one of those packs and depending on what you were using for a platform, like the Predator platform will fit perfectly in the front little strap. If you're familiar with the Mystery Ranch packs, they have a lid that you can buy for, like I have the Sawtooth and like any of their like frame packs, you can buy the extra lid kind of like, the XO packs have the lid that has a storage and you can fold it over.
Sure.
That's built into that pop-up 38. So it's got these two little, like tubular, I guess, storage pouches on the top. And then that still folds over and it still pops out. Like that 38 is a really great bag. My dad got that to go, use as a day pack out in Colorado. But you could use it for just about anything, like a really great versatile pack with that meat packing ability. And if you were going to put like a 0.5, you could put the 0.5 in between them, I think you'd be just fine.
Dave has the Mystery Ranch Pintler for his Western bag. Mm-hmm. And I had the Kuyu with the bigger Venture bag on it. And I felt in testing, just swapping them out, I felt his carried better. Like the suspension system, it seemed to carry lighter or yeah, the padding was better through the shoulders. The Kuyu with its modularity, I think trying to be a Swiss Army knife, you know, where you swap out a bigger bag. I almost wonder if the frame, if it's going to fit an 1800 cubic inch bag, I would think a bigger frame would carry something 3000 cubic inches much better, right? Just get a little bigger frame. But, you know, putting that bigger bag on the smaller frame, I just don't think it carried as good as Dave's similar size bag.
Well, yeah. And those Mystery Ranch, the ones that you're talking about, like if you were to do something like that, like, so he can get for that, like the Sawtooth, which I have is like a 4,500 cubic inch or whatever, but they make the Mule, which is like a day pack, like whitetail style pack. On there, and you can, because of that frame, you could add the lid on there, you could add any of that stuff, and you could use it. But that, I mean, so the bag that I've been using this year, so I've used both of the Huntworth packs, and they're just fine. They're the larger one actually has like a metal kind of like internal frame, and it's pretty nice. It's a little floppy, I guess, like as far as the material. Same thing with like the Trophy Line case stuff, like their original one. Like the bag, the material just wasn't stout enough, but I use that. It's got straps everywhere, like appropriately to carry in all of your stuff. But if you know me, if you followed along with the podcast, if you've heard me complain about anything, it's always going to be the bow rope. And like the bow rope is like the bane of my existence. And one of our listeners, a Patreon, another gear guy, he mentioned that Kuyu Divide 2000. And it said it's like the perfect saddle hang pack. And I was like, oh, okay. So I started looking into them. And then, of course, they went on sale. So I bought one, picked one up for like $120. And
yeah, I saw that sale. Did that just go on for Christmas?
It was before I bought. So I have like a really ugly color one. Like, so they got rid of this like green color. And I was like, I don't care. Like, I just want to try this pack out. And, it's kind of interesting because it comes out in the middle. So you can stuff like your bibs, you can stuff like your warm clothes in there without having to access it, but you can fit a it unzips at the bottom. So you can fit a tripod or your rifle down through the actual pack itself.
Okay.
And so what I did is I was like, I'm just going to put my Doyles in the bottom of there, pull that thing out the bottom. And then I just zip tied the zipper shut so I don't lose it. And it's perfect. I mean, it's awesome. And I still can use all that space. It has a flap on the front where you can put, like my platform doesn't fit in there very well. But a Predator platform will fit in there, just fine. And everything lines up. I've used that all year and it's pretty good. But what I was getting at was with those nice padded straps, and that one has a waist belt that's removable. So you could take that off to get rid of some of that bulk, but in the tree, those nice padded straps are now like, you know, they have shape. So they're kind of like out there. So you have to like mm-hmm. maneuver those around or have a good gear strap so you can lower your backpack down below you or wherever. So it's not in the way. Cause otherwise, I mean, the pack is kind of like in your space.
Yeah. And I tried to go to like a small, like almost like fanny system. And with, I think maybe if I wasn't camera, like if I wasn't filming hunts, I probably could do it for October. Come November though, like I'm taking way too much, like just items and bibs, jacket. Like, I'm just like, dude, it's you get to a spot and you're there for a bit. So I do graduate to a bigger bag.
Now, do you ever like leave stuff at the bottom of the tree? Cause I mean, that, I guess I'm always just like the one trip up guy. So I'm like, I always have all my stuff, but it would seem like in that situation, if you had all that stuff, like you could bring in like Dave's Pintler pack with everything, get everything set up and then just toss it and leave it at the bottom of the tree.
Yeah. So like occasionally, like I'll leave straps or something at the base of my tree. I generally get to my tree. I walk in and like, just base layers and like light pants. And I generally hang my system, my mobile setup, come down and then put on like my bibs, my puffy vest and my jacket, and then throw my backpack on and go up. I always got to go twice once I have layers. That's just how I've always done it. The rest of the guys kind of do the same thing. And that's just due to like sweating. Where I was hunting this year, I was doing like a mile point two loop into where I was going because I could go like maybe straight shot, but I felt like I was spooking deer that I was hunting on where they were going for the morning. And I would climb elevation and I would literally undress at the top of the mountain before I would kind of make my final 600 yard commute into my spot because yeah, I just get sweated up so bad. I know Jake Bush does the same kind of thing where like, I don't know, you sweat so much getting into the spot. It's like now you cool down. You almost don't want to wear the same shirt you wore because it's wet at that point.
I feel like some of that stuff, like with the more we focus on like hunting the wind and all that stuff, like mm-hmm. I feel like it doesn't matter. Like I feel like some of it is...
Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
That confidence piece where you're like, I gotta change my everything. I can't leave anything at the bottom of the tree. But like, I mean, there's been so many times where it's just like, you're up there and you're especially this year with the weather that we've had, like you're just sweating, you're just sweat soaked and you're just like, whatever. Like, and you still have a good hunt, you know? But
yeah,
I think it's that like part of the, like the, and it could go either way, but like the Pareto principle of like, you know, 20% of your success comes from 80% of this, or, you know, 80, 20, one way or the other. And it's like, there's people who focus on like so much of the wrong stuff. Like, you know, like, does it really matter? If you've got a good spot with a good wind and you know where the deer are coming from, like, you could be up there like in your underwear. You could be up there in a snowmobile suit. I don't think it matters as much. You know, maybe there's that comfort thing. But like this year, there hasn't been any temperatures where it's been like, oh, so cold. Like I needed all that stuff. You know, I don't think.
Yeah.
But so as you were talking about earlier, you're getting ready for muzzleloader season. And that's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, is because, you know, I guess I feel like, as hunters and like mobile hunters and all of this stuff, and we're talking about traditional equipment and all this stuff, we really do, like, I feel like we're hard on each other as hunters. Like, whether you're using, I mean, I still think there's no room for crossbows unless you're air bows or any of that stuff, unless you're disabled or there's some good reason, kid, something like that.
Sure.
But you know, it's hunter numbers and all that stuff. So we just kind of like shy away from the topic, and you know, we don't necessarily gun hunt, although that hunt with my daughter was fun. I mean, I guess it just kind of like opened my eyes again to see, like, you know, there can be joy in killing animals with a rifle. But you know, you had mentioned like, oh, getting the muzzleloader back out. And I don't know if you commented on like one of Kevin's posts or something. And you said like he had like kind of reignited that spark in you to go back out with the muzzleloader or any of that. It was something along those lines. So I was just wondering from like a, I don't know what, I think we put bow hunting like up on this pedestal. Like that's the only way to hunt. And I
bow hunting is cool, right? Like it is the cool thing,
but I've got,
you get more likes if you shoot it with a bow than you do if you shoot it and you got an orange vest on that. I mean, that is reality,
but I've gone back and forth. Like when we started this podcast and all that stuff, and like, we were like, and John was like, you can't gun hunt ever again. Like it's off the table. And like learning all of this stuff from all the people that we've talked to, up and hunting in different ways, it's like, man, I feel like I could kill a lot more deer with a gun, you know, using these same tactics. But it doesn't, you know, on some level, it doesn't feel the same or whatever. So how do you feel about that with, you know, your platform, all of your, you know, beliefs? And it was funny when you were talking about that deer like 3 days in a row. I was going to say, was that with a cell camera or how did you know? Were you in the tree?
I was in the tree every I think, what was it? South winds. That's when I was looping that system. Yeah, as far as like the firearm thing and like, you know, does a buck mean as much to me? I kind of like, if I shot the same deer shooting it with a bow, everything else is the same versus shooting it with a gun. I definitely think the bow buck is going to mean more. It's a harder weapon to kill things with, even the compound. You know, our season in Ohio, this is kind of, you got 7 days on the first crack and then you got two. And then muzzleloader is like a 4-day season here in January. You know, I still gun hunt. I mean, it's a form, like
we just don't talk about like it.
No, we talk about, I mean, we talk about doing deer drives and everything else. You know, that's how I was introduced to hunting, was getting to tag along for a gun season weekend. But yeah, like I don't, if you said I had 1 day to shoot a nice buck, and you said you could take any of the days of firearm season, any of the days of bow season, I'm going to take the day in bow season as far as a chance to see a good rack buck. The fact our gun season does fall later, I think, is part of that. Like I just, in all my years, I've shot one deer, one buck with a gun in Ohio. And yeah, like I just don't see a lot of bucks gun hunting. I think it's because it does fall that kind of outside the normal rut. I might feel differently if we had like a 2 week firearm season where you could take advantage of some natural movement that was more rut bound. Yeah, I'm so glad we fall where we do. But yeah, no, I gun hunt. I it is what it is. I do like to I've seen some good scouting type missions with gun in hand. I've seen some third rut during our muzzleloader season and if you will, over the years, but I look at it as a little bit of a scout. You know, you can still hunt. It's a little different tactic. I'm actually probably pretty good at still hunting. I have the patience not to want to move too fast. So I do enjoy it, man.
Yeah. Like I said, I was just wondering because I feel like it's one of those things that's just like, we're not supposed to talk about gun hunting. Like I think Kevin is like probably the one guy who's like the most unapologetic about it. Like who has
gun hunting cool again. Yeah. I think he said, I don't. If a guy has a bunch of gun kills, whatever. It does, you know, there is something to getting it done inside of 25 yards with a more traditional bow hunting equipment. That is a skill set. I don't know. I don't knock anybody for shooting too many bucks with a gun, I think.
Well, I just think that, you know, as, you know, hunters and, you know, people who are talking about it, I think we kind of create that same echo chamber, though. Like, I think, you know, where, like, everybody's killing 140s and, like, you have to do that. You got to wait for a big buck. I think there's a lot of guys that have not killed too many deer who are like, well, I can't go gun hunting because it's not cool. And, you know, there's, you know, I think that becomes like a slippery slope. Like I think I would tell everybody out there that's like, hasn't killed a bunch of deer, hasn't killed any bucks or any of that stuff. Just, and I understand all of it, but, to say, I would tell you 100 times out of 100 to go hunt with a gun before I said, you know what, maybe you should just, and I did tell one of our patrons that he should go hunt with a crossbow, but I was just kind of ribbing him because he was having a hard season. but you know, at the end of the day, I would rather that somebody went out there and like had a successful hunt, had fun, and, you know, then go out there and just beat their head against the wall trying to live up to somebody else's standard, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? I kind of feel some of the same way you do about when I see guys bow hunting turkeys, because like, it's cooler. I'm like, dude, go shoot them with a shotgun. That's so like, that is fun.
But, yeah, I'm that guy. And you know what?
Well, like, for first time birds.
Oh yeah. No.
My buddy, if AJ listened to this, I busted him so hard on a phone call. I was like, dude, like, you don't know what you're missing. I was like, you've never killed a bird. I said, grab that shotgun.
Man, I was gonna say, like, you know, Walt from Jason Tales, he's always like, the turkeys are designed to be shot in the face with a shotgun. Like, it's not supposed to be like this thing. And like, I think the way that I killed that deer in Kansas this year was like all my turkey hunting with a bow experience all led up to that one instance of like, duck behind the decoy and load another arrow and shoot. Cause I'm like, I've been in this situation before where, you know, these turkeys don't know what happened, but and they're so fired up by looking at the decoys or whatever. And I was like, man, you gotta be out there and you gotta mess up all these times so that one time you can do it. And
that is true. That process there paid off in that buck. I mean, you can't argue that. It prepared you for that.
Yep. And so, but I don't know. I would say the same thing for turkeys, because like, I guess the difference is that like, unless you're one of these guys that's like, you know, you're like, oh, well, I'm going to get this gun that shoots TSS out to 70. And I'm just going to start waylaying everything that comes, you know, even pokes its head up within eyesight. You know, I feel like most, and this may be the thinking, but I feel like most of the turkeys that you kill are in bow range. you know, for the most part, like I say, unless you're shooting at 70 with TSS or something.
Sure.
And I think that that's why, but I think you have to be somewhat of a well, I don't know. I guess if you were like out west in some of these areas where you see like all these not Osceolas or whatever, like the Rios or whatever, where there's like hundreds of them, you know, in the field and stuff like that, where maybe you don't have to be as good of a caller or as good, you know, you just got to be able to get in there. I don't know. But I think one thing around here, as we get further into the season, like you have to be somewhat of a good caller. You have to have some idea of how to hunt these turkeys to get them in range. And that's, you know, maybe that's where the shotgun makes it a little bit easier. It gives you a little bit of a second chance, I guess.
Yeah. Now I'll say this, I almost respect the kind of going back to the deer hunting side of things. If I saw a buck get shot with or a deer get shot with a gun and a crossbow, and let's say it's a military aged male, I think I'm pushing the like on the gun kill a little more. Like I might respect that, right? He's got a shorter season. But yeah, I'm kind of woe with Wald on turkey's got to be shot in the face, but you don't have to get drawn. There is, just like with the stick bow thing, like in transitioning there are a few of those nuances that just because the weapon range is shorter, there's like four other things that got to go into that final 10 seconds.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, like my turkey season this year is just insane. And, that getting drawn thing, all that stuff. Like my problem is like the execution. I get so wound up that it's just like punch the trigger, just send it. Like, I don't know. I called in a bunch of turkeys this year. It was probably one of the, when you said that it was like the, one of the best seasons that you've had without killing a buck. You know, I just listened to that podcast with Greg and Clint on Truth from the Stand.
Yeah.
And it was the same thing. You know, Greg's struggling, but he's having a great season. You know, hit a couple bucks that he hasn't recovered and just, you know, deer been all over him. And that was kind of like my turkey season. It was amazing. And I think, you know, to a point, like getting out there and having those experiences is what's the most important part. Like the, especially with you guys in Ohio, like once that buck's on the ground, like the season's over. Like it's over. And for what we talk about, as much as we love, you know, the grip and grin, we love to eat venison, we love all of that stuff. Like we also love the grind. Like no matter how much we complain about it or how many, that's the challenge or the, I mean, that's why you set your goals higher. That's why you keep pushing it, because, you know, shooting year and a half old bucks is easy. Like we'll just shoot them all the time. Like that's not a big deal. And then it gets easier to kill these ones and these ones and these ones. It's like, if it were about just meat or if it were just about, you know, killing something, we'd be, our seasons would be much shorter. We'd have a much different approach to this and that grind, you know, so that having that one season, that one tag, that one everything, you know, that's something that like I got to take into consideration when I think about people talking about, well, you know, because then you're, maybe you like fishing or something else because there's nothing else to do.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. Don't get me wrong. Like there is a nice feeling of punching a tag and the beer you drink with the buck on the tailgate or back home. Like when all the work's done, that is the best beer of the year. But yeah, you almost appreciate it more. Some guys, don't get me wrong, my buddy Dave, he's like, man, I'd take an easy one every, you know, I'm waiting on that lucky buck that just gets kicked my way third day of season and I'm done. He says I'm sick and twisted and I'd rather kill like a buck on the last day and have struggled through. I do think that feeling would be pretty sweet, but
it's what keeps us going back. You know, like my daughter killed a deer. And I killed a deer and we have plenty of venison. Like it isn't like, oh man, I just need two more deer and then the year's complete, you know? Mm-hmm. But you know, I got another week to go out with the rest of this week, to go out. I'm going to go out scouting tomorrow. And then I've got a couple more opportunities to hunt. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm taking the trad bow and, You know, the only thing, like, this is the wrong mindset because I've never had it happen. I've never killed a deer like nearing the last day or anything like that. So it's like one of those things where you think about it in some sort of like irrational way, like, well, what if I do this? Or what if I, like, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But, you know, shooting a shed buck, or like you said, like shooting a buck on the last day or whatever like that. And I think back to like that, Life of a Public Land Bow Hunter, where he shoots that buck and the antlers fall off, you know? And it's like,
yeah,
you know, you went through all that trouble to finally, you know, like think about that from like my perspective, like let's write that narrative as my story. Like, went all the way through the year. It's like the last day of the season. I finally shoot one with the stick bow and his antlers fall off. Like, it's like,
you know? You gotta just laugh.
I know.
Like, dude, that'd be wild.
Yeah.
That'd be wild.
Yeah, it's like, it's certainly like first world problems, right? But it's like we'll cross that bridge when we come to it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Last year I had a buck I started finding late season. He shed his antlers within a foot and a half of my XOP. I had hung it. I was like, dude, I'm going to get this deer. Like, he evaded me for the rut. And I was like, I'm on him now. And yeah, it was a weird feeling. And I thought about going and hunting him as a shed buck. And I couldn't get past, you know, I live as a deer hunter to like hear that twig snap and look. And like, if he was walking in without his rack, like that feeling wouldn't have been the same.
So how do you feel about that for me? Like your perspective. And I think this is like, it's a problem that not many people have. But I've heard guys talk about it, especially like in Kansas, about like busted up bucks or broken tines or like half rack, you know, like where they're broke off or whatever. So you're same story, you know, but it's November 8th and that buck you've been hunting and that you're on, he comes in and he's, you know, he's missing his twos and threes.
Yeah, you know, twos and threes, I might still shoot him probably. Like, I would say 80% I'm still slinging an arrow. Like, because the buck before he shed, he broke one size three and one size two. And we named the deer G3 because he has a pretty signature three. And I was ready to shoot, like, no doubt. A half rack might get a pass. I don't know. What about yourself? Like, do you have, and if he's 20 inches wide, he's dying regardless. Like, if he's got beams that go out, like, I'm shooting. What about you? What if half rack comes in or busted twos?
I think it's all about that, like, heart thing. Like, if I get excited, like, I'm gonna shoot him. And I like, I've said it before, like, I've passed a lot of deer that I should have shot just like for my own growth as a hunter, like thinking that I was at a level that I wasn't, you know.
Me too.
Like that's where I was at the time. Like, that's a deer that I should have shot, you know, and there's, you know, there's, it's easy to look back and say, oh yeah, well, I should have shot that deer. But in reality, like, some of those deer that I didn't shoot were like some of the bigger deer that I'd seen that year. And I wasn't on bigger deer. So it's like, you know, so that said, like, I, you know, one of the guys who has a place out in Kansas, he'll send me these bucks. Like, what do you think about this guy? I'm like, Tim, they're all shooters. Like, I'm shooting every single one of them. Like, you know, it's the shooter's got to shoot, you know, like if it's a mature deer or like, you know, a big body deer, like, I'm shooting. I'm not going to be like, well, you know, now, like the smaller deer behind me, like, that's a deer that I probably wouldn't shoot today, but I'll shoot him with a stick all day long. But you know, yeah, I would like to think that have moved past that. Now, if I'm having a bad year, if I've wounded a couple and missed another one, then, you know, maybe I need to get another one. Maybe I need to go back a step, you know?
Yeah. Dave and I talk about that. And I think I've heard Heath talk about that, where, like, let's say you go on a run and you kill some bucks and you're growing in order, and then you don't shoot something for a year or two. Like, you're allowed to move that scale. I always felt like, you know, when I was in my early 20s, mid 20s, that scale was set. Like,
you ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
And that's what the industry, that's what early podcast, it's set. I'm only shooting at blah, blah, blah. But I really like that sliding scale based on how you feel, your personal goals. Like, I think that's important. And stuff like you just said, like, I should have shot that buck at that time. Like, I think that's an important reflection. And now, like, people listening to this podcast, there's probably going to be a couple guys in their 20s that are like, yeah, maybe I should shoot a few more of those tweener bucks. Because you and I are both saying that we wish we would have shot those tweener bucks back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, you listeners in your early 20s, I think you're starting to climb that ladder. Shoot those tweeners because you learned something in that final 10 seconds.
And I think there's something else to go along with that, kind of like what you talked about, look, with that tailgate beer, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would say that whether it's a gun hunt, a bow hunt. You know, maybe your buddy's got a crossbow and you want to sway him into shooting a regular bow, a duck hunt, a pheasant hunt, whatever. I think if someone invites you to go hunting with them and you have the opportunity, I think you should go do that for that shared experience, for that camaraderie. You know, maybe you learn something, maybe you can teach something, but you know, I don't think I've went on too many hunts with other people where I was like, you know, I hadn't gone on that. I wish I wouldn't have taken the time to do that. Like, and it's not always about the harvest or whatever, but it's that camaraderie. It's that tailgate beer. It's that, you know, it is that opportunity to be part of something, you know, that you wouldn't have been. Same thing like with track and deer and all that stuff. I mean, that's where I think that hunting community, that bond, that type of stuff is really that's the stuff that we, you know, we can't sell you, right? That's what hunting is about. It's not about the gear or the antlers or whatever. It's the core of everything that we do.
Yeah. I like that thought a lot, the core.
Well, I mean, it's hard because in this day and age with like My Spot and Big Bucks and You Killed My Deer and, you know, Naming Deer and all of this stuff, you know, we get and you know, going a mile in and doing all this stuff. Like a lot of us that do that, we're hunting by ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so it's a lot more fun to celebrate with somebody else than just by yourself. And I mean, and you see it in your videos and your posts. I mean, you guys are calling each other immediately saying like, hey, you know, bring the ravioli and the thermos. Like we got to get this thing out of here. Right. And you know, if you don't share that with anybody else, nobody's coming. Like, you know what I mean? Like you're going to have a very long, lonely drag out.
You know? Yeah. No, there is that aspect to a good couple guys. And they might not necessarily be there on the drag, but that phone call home, the you know, once you get signal. And I do think too, like, don't get me wrong, I love my wife, but like when I shoot a buck, I think the guys are a little happier for me than even her.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know.
So funny part about that is like I killed that deer in Kansas. I talked to my wife and I'm like, yeah, and, you know, she's like, what are you coming home? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I was like, I'd like to, you know, I would like to kill one, you know, tomorrow and, you know, then have a little bit of time, you know, to take care of things. And, you know, but I'm like, in reality, I don't have to be to work till next Wednesday. So, you know, I don't know, maybe Saturday, something like this is Tuesday, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I shot that deer. I texted her a picture and she's like, what? I thought you were texting me a picture of somebody else's deer. Like, no confidence in me whatsoever, you know? Like,
oh, she doubted you.
Yeah. She was, I think, maybe a little excited for me, but you know, I called my buddies. I called her dad, you know, and we talked and they wanted to hear every, like, was he all bristled up? Like, what do his hooves look like? You know, they want to know everything.
Yeah, about this damn the details. Deer. How far, you know, was he quarantined? Did you hesitate on the draw? How'd you pull it off with the decoy? Adam, you said tailgate beer. What I got to ask now, it is the about to be January 1 this time of year. What is the tailgate beer choice if you are so fortunate this week?
Oh, I'm one of these like degenerates where like I will drink anything you put in front of me. So it's not I'm not like going to be, oh, I got to have this, I got to have that. Today, if I went upstairs, it's probably either PBR or Busch Light. So that's just
okay.
That's and
would you stop on your way home and get something that you're like, this is a celebratory beer?
Oh yeah, yeah. But I would go and get, you know, whatever comes in a 16 or 24 ounce can, because we're not wasting it on a 12 ouncer, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I generally do, Modelo's, and Miller Lights. I generally like, I don't know, last couple of times I've taken a buck over to Dave's house, I got a 12 of each of those.
It's been, for this season and last, I think it's been Crown Apple. It's been the okay. Like the drink of choice, but like I said,
that's festive. I like it.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's Crown. It comes in a nice bag. Goes down pretty easy. You know,
yeah, it's classic.
It's kind of a whiskey. You know, I mean, yeah. It's kind of like on the lower spectrum, but you know, it's a nice sipper, and you know, you can celebrate with that. I feel like.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah. So. Oh, shoot. There was one more thing I wanted to add. Oh, yeah. So before we round this out, I saw you had posted something about doing the carnivore diet.
Yeah. Like,
are you going to do that?
So Dave, this was Dave's idea. And Dave's somebody that needs a comrade for these adventures of discipline, suck fests, whatever you want to call it. And I said, all right, 5 days a week, maybe six. Let's do it. Let's map it out. So he has mapped out our restrictions. I'm a little concerned how my body's going to react. No carbs. I do eat pretty clean, like 5 days a week. But I do eat like some rice, some breads. Like, I'm human. I like tacos and beer and pizza. Yes. But, yeah, I think we're going to shoot for 5 days a week in January, which is the carnivore month. Let's try it. So that is eggs, meats. We're gonna allow nuts and some dairy. Might flex in fruit depending on bowel movements.
Okay. I saw that, and I've seen like a couple of years ago you guys did like I don't know if you were getting in shape for going out west, and it was like we're gonna do a point system with push-ups and miles ran and all of that. So you guys kind of go into this mode, yeah, every now and again.
So dude, we do the cold plunges too. Me, Rick, and Dave have tubs set up in either the garage, or Rick sometimes throws his on his back porch. And that is like a true test to, I'm about to do something that's painful and you know, not fun, but man, it's a kick when you get done with it.
Do you think that transitions into helping you in the woods or in life, or is it just like you know, one of those things where you're like, well, now I know I can do something that sucks, so this isn't as bad as a cold plunge.
Yeah, exactly. I think the mental discipline of this it doesn't suck as much as the cold. Maybe it helps a little bit with your cold tolerance, like my hands in the cold. Like, I don't have the best circulation and you know, I don't know. I wonder if it does translate to a little bit of how that feels.
Yeah, like I said, I saw that and I was just like, man, I gotta ask about that because that's a pretty extreme.
Yeah. Thing. We're only doing a month. We're only doing 5 days a week or six. And there's always an asterisk there. If I'm not feeling good, I will pivot, but I'm at least going to try.
And the thing is like, that's still like, because Frank's going down to hunt Ohio for muzzleloader. And like, that's still in your deer season. So like you're going to be like disrupting like your real life. Like,
yeah, that's true. That is true. Yeah. I don't cold plunge on days I hunt. I will say that much. Yeah, you're right though. The calorie intake will be shifted a little bit during that.
So what do you do there? Like no celebratory beers. We're gonna have to celebratory chocolate milk if we allow it.
Yeah, no, you shoot a buck. Like we shoot a buck. Like there is reason to break the disciplined adventure of the month. But yeah. Yeah, that's a good call. Maybe I'll pocket a flex day when I see hunts upcoming. Like, hey, Saturday I'm hunting. I can't. I got to save a flex day for that.
Oh, well, like I said, this podcast was going to be a little bit all over the place. I think we kind of hit on all the avenues I was thinking. So for the the cold plunges, the meat month. And everything else that is the Whitetail Experience, where can people follow along with everything you've got going on?
Yeah, just I would say Instagram and YouTube are our main avenues. You can find us there. So look up the Whitetail Experience. You'll see some shenanigans and some decent deer hunting and some talk of like what we did today.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you taking the time and good luck for the rest of the season.
Thanks, Adam.
Hey everyone, Will Cooper here, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. Join us as we dive deep into the world of hunting and outdoor pursuits. We've brought together some of the most accomplished individuals in the industry to share their invaluable insights and experiences with you. But here's the kicker. It's not just about hunting tips and tactics. We're exploring how you can carve your own path, elevate your skills, and gain some wisdom from the best in the field. So whether you're a seasoned hunter looking to fine-tune your skills or a newbie eager to learn, our podcast has something for everyone. Stay tuned for more exciting guests and hotter topics. Don't miss out and subscribe to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast today and start making your mark in the great outdoors.
Join Captain Justin Leake and Meredith McCord for the best fishing action along Panama City Beach. Tune in to Chasing the Sun every Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.